What does it mean that Jesus Christ is our great high priest, the greater Moses, and the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies? The New Concordia Commentary on Hebrews is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. It's written by regular guest Dr. John Kleinig. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your pastor would deeply appreciate the New Concordia Commentary on Hebrews, 1-800-325-3040.
What are you hiding, Peter?
Yeah, Spider-Man!
I'm just kidding, I don't care. Bye.
There's a ton of other subsystems in here, but they're all disabled by the training wheels protocol.
I'm sick of Mr. Stark treating me like a kid.
But you are a kid.
Yeah, a kid who can stop a bus with his bare hands.
A little bit of the trailer of the movie Spider-Man Homecoming. It's the latest in many Spider-Man movies. This one a little different, brought into a different, as they say in the comic book world, universe. Are there Christian themes in there for the Christian viewer? What kind of cautions might the viewer observe before going to see Spider-Man Homecoming? We'll be answering those questions over the next half hour of Issues Etc. as we review the movie Spider-Man Homecoming. Joining us on this Thursday afternoon to do so, Pastor Ted Giese. He has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and he taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, welcome back.
Thanks, Todd.
What's with the subtitle here, Homecoming, Spider-Man Homecoming?
Well, it kind of plays a dual purpose. This Spider-Man, particularly in this movie, is a teenager in high school. So there is a homecoming dance at one point during the movie as it unfolds. But also the other part is Marvel Studios, and prior to that, Marvel comic books, back a long time ago, they used to license their characters and products out into other movie studios. But now what you have is a homecoming of the Spider-Man character back into the Marvel cinematic universe. So that's kind of part of it too. So Sony Pictures is providing the funding to get the movie going, and they're going to take the box office. But in this new agreement they have, Spider-Man can be a part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and Marvel Studios has full creative control, and they also get marketing when it comes to merchandise. They can get money from the merchandising. So that's kind of, there's two kind of things going on. One, there's a homecoming dance, and then the other kind of cheeky double meaning is that it's kind of welcoming Spider-Man back home into the Marvel fold, as it were.
Is this yet another origins story for Spider-Man?
It is, but it's way fresher, if that's possible. I mean, I think they're keenly aware that there have been five other recent Spider-Man movies, like starting back in 2002. So they know that, you know, people have been inundated with the Spider-Man origin story stuff. So what you don't get in this movie is, your spoiler alert, you're not going to get him being bitten by the radioactive spider. You're not going to get his parents, all of the stuff with that, and his uncle, and all of the things that you have run across in previous incarnations of this story, you're not going to get in this one. It kind of just starts right in the middle, but still takes you on a kind of a coming-of-age story for the character of Spider-Man as a young teenage kid.
Is all that backstory dispensed with?
The kid who's playing Spider-Man, Peter Parker, Tom Holland, and his buddy, Jacob Batalon, who plays this guy Ned, there's a scene where they're walking along, and he's asking him, peppering him with questions about things, and you know, he mentions the spider and all that kind of stuff, but it's not, you don't get the scene with it all unfolding, and you know, it's just in dialogue some of that stuff gets put in there, and you don't get the line, you know, like from previous Spider-Man movies and comic books and cartoons, with great responsibility comes, you know, that part is not part of it. So, but it has its own kind of internal logic and story devices to get the ball rolling.
So what's the plot, and how is it, if at all, kind of incorporated into the Marvel universe?
Well, it's kind of cleverly incorporated in. So what you get is back in The Avengers in 2012, the end of that movie had New York City being kind of attacked by aliens from outer space. So what you get then is the tie-in is that after all of that, somebody has to clean up the wreckage. So at first, the New York City municipal government decides to get salvagers to come do the work. So there's a salvager, and this is a huge job, and he's got his extra trucks and his guys and everybody, and he's doing the salvaging work. And then there's a mid-level bureaucrat from the U.S. Department of Damage Control for this. There is no U.S. Department of Damage Control, but in a, you know, world full of alien attacks and superheroes, I guess you need that, steps in and like shuts down their salvage job. And then basically the guy who's got the salvage job, that's Michael Keaton's character of Adrian Toomes, and that guy turns out to be the villain eventually. So what you get is 8 years later, then you have stuff with Peter Parker, and you know, and then the additional tie-in is back to the Captain America Civil War movie from 2016, where Spider-Man made an appearance. So the same kid that played Spider-Man there is the same Spider-Man that you get here. And it all kind of connects that way. So, and then of course, Spider-Man is from the New York City, and particularly Queens Borough of New York City. So it all kind of connects together. So what happens is he discovers this criminal operation, and they continued to salvage alien technology and then manufacture weapons that they turn around and sell. So he's kind of run across a gun smuggling, kind of weapons smuggling criminal organization.
Is he a human being endowed with superpowers, or is he a human being enhanced by really cool technology, or a combination of both?
Yeah, a combination of both. So yes, he, because of the radioactive spider bite kind of thing, he's got extra human strength. And you see that displayed at different points in the movie. But he then also has this really fancy suit that he's received as kind of an aid, a gift from Tony Stark, the Iron Man character. So Robert Downey Jr. shows up in the movie. So people who have watched the trailers know that it's going to be a movie that includes Iron Man. But yeah, so that is another connection back to the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Talk about the character. He's a teenager, so that's different from, I think, all of the other superhero movies we've seen here. He's unique in that sense.
He is a teenager, and previous Spider-Man movies have always had him as a teenager to start out with. But in this case, he's played by somebody who's much closer in age to being a teenager, and he comes off as a teenager better. And he, because he's a teenager, he, you know, he has the teenage angst that teenagers have. And he also like makes mistakes, and he's, you know, maybe he's smart, but he's naive. So like, and he's a little awkward, and he's doesn't, you know, not sure what to say to girls, all of that kind of stuff. So that part of it is quite authentic feeling, like in terms of there's a really good connection with the teenage world that teenagers live in.
What kind of Christian themes did you note in watching Spider-Man Homecoming?
Well, it showed up in the trailer, so it's not a big, you know, spoiler. But there's a moment where the Staten Island Ferry is kind of like breaking in half, and he tries to rescue everybody, and he shoots the webs to the one side and to the other side, and his body gets stretched out in this kind of Christ-like, Christ being crucified kind of pose. And we just talked about this with the Pirates of the Caribbean movie with Captain Jack Sparrow, and how that was part of that movie, and how it shows up over and over and over again. Like, there's so many movies. Like 300 was a movie where it was in there, and one of the Alien movies. There's it shows up in superhero movies. It shows up outside of superhero movies. Even in that movie, The Avengers from 2012, Iron Man is the one who has that kind of moment where he's saved everybody, and then he has that kind of pose again. So this is a kind of a connection to Christ and the crucifixion. That's kind of a visual cue of salvation. Of course, this is like just salvation in the moment and not salvation for all mankind. It doesn't involve a death or a resurrection in this case either, but it is kind of unmistakable. So people will notice that, I think, that kind of that striking image of the feet close together and the arms stretched out to the sides.
So this is a flawed central character. Is there, we often talk about this just in terms of the drama, is there a theme of redemption for anybody in this film?
Yeah, this central character is let's just say the central character is less flawed and more virtuous than other characters that we've seen in superhero films. So like a Tony Stark as Iron Man is a womanizer, he's a drinker, he's puffed up, full of himself, very arrogant. But he's in contrast, and they do contrast them in this film. Peter Parker is much more virtuous. And he wants to prove himself, but he's certainly more, he's got an internal struggle, and he's being tempted by the teenage things that are in the world and the things that teenagers fall into. He's being tempted by fame and things that might come with superhero kind of related stuff. But along the way, whenever it kind of comes up, he chooses to serve other people first and not the thing that maybe would be immediately gratifying to him. That makes him a bit more of a virtuous character. And you get like this moment between Tony Stark's character and his character where they essentially, he just says, don't do any, this is what Tony Stark says to him, don't do anything I would do, and definitely don't do anything I wouldn't do. There's this little gray area in there. That's where you operate. That's what Tony Stark is saying to him. And of course, here, you know, Spider-Man has him as this mentor and wants to be like him, but then Tony Stark would reply back, I need you to be better. So there's an indication that he does want him actually to be better. Like, he wants Spider-Man to be better than he is. And it turns out Spider-Man, Peter Parker's character, actually is better than Tony Stark was. So this is kind of an interesting thing for some of these comic book movies, because even with just recently, in the last number of years, they've had the reboot of all of the Superman stuff in the DC universe, and they've kind of worked into it angst and stuff that isn't really part of the Superman story. They've injected that in for these new ones because it creates drama. Here the drama exists, but he as a character, while a teenager and, you know, having some anxiety and angst, comes across as somebody who's way more thoughtful of his neighbor and his neighborhood than he would be on the end of being selfish and self-centered, if that makes any sense. So he is a more virtuous superhero character, which is a very positive thing.
We're talking with Pastor Ted Giese about the movie Spider-Man Homecoming, getting a little review of it. A lot of these superhero films have the intrigue of a secret identity. Does this Spider-Man movie have that as well? We'll be right back. And we're gonna have a ball just like we always do. Saturday night at the movies. Who cares what picture you see? What does it mean that Jesus Christ is our great high priest, the greater Moses, and the fulfillment of Old Testament prophecies? The New Concordia Commentary on Hebrews is the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. It's written by regular guest Dr. John Kleinig. Browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. Your pastor would deeply appreciate the New Concordia Commentary on Hebrews, 1-800-325-3040.
Stuck in traffic? Waiting in a line at the grocery store? Do better than scrolling through pictures of your aunt's chai latte and your friend's distraught statuses regarding the baseball game on Facebook. Download the digital version of The Lutheran Witness and get your theological fix instead. Not a subscriber? Visit cph.org/trylutheranwitness for special offer, $6.99 for 6 issues. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran perspective.
Hi, this is Pastor Brian Katchelmeyer of Redeemer Lutheran Church in Los Alamos, New Mexico. Over the next 5 years, Los Alamos National Laboratory is planning to hire thousands of new employees in the areas of science, engineering, security, administration, and construction. If you have both a technical and confessional mind, Los Alamos may be the place for you. I invite you to explore the possibilities on the websites for the Town, Laboratory, and Redeemer Lutheran Church.
Metro East Lutheran High School in Edwardsville, Illinois, engages young adults in a Christ-centered environment, delivering academic excellence and spiritual growth to develop Christian leaders for tomorrow. We provide a Christ-focused alternative to public high schools. Many of our students receive tuition assistance. To help us provide tuition assistance to more students, go to melhs.org and click on the giving page, or call me, Dr. J. Krause, principal, at 618-656-0043.
Where Christianity meets culture, you're listening to Issues Etc.
The church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century. The 16th century. The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Pastor Ted Giese is our guest as we review the movie Spider-Man Homecoming on this Thursday. Terry Mattingly will join us a little bit later to talk about worship wars, patriotism, and a Christian megachurch in Dallas, and our series Christ in the Old Testament. We'll look at Psalm 65 with Pastor Brian Katchelmeyer. Ted, secret identity often plays a big part in these superhero movies, and sometimes it's a closely guarded secret like Batman or Superman, as in the case of the other Marvel heroes. I noticed they've dispensed with that. Tony Stark wants to be the hero, not just Iron Man. What about this version of Spider-Man Homecoming? How does secret identity play into it?
Well, it largely remains a secret. I mean, I don't want to give too much away, but his very close friend finds out who he is. So he's got like one guy who's like essentially like a wingman to him in a way. This guy who's his close friend who knows what's going on. But he's and like Tony Stark knows what's going on, and Tony Stark has this guy Happy Rhodes. I think, I don't know. Anyways, his name is Happy. Jon Favreau plays the part, and he's kind of the minder, or he kind of takes care of, or is keeping an eye on the young teenage kid. So, you know, Peter Parker's always sending in his reports of what he did that day, you know, save the cat out of the tree, you know, help somebody get their, you know, their bicycle back from being stolen, that kind of stuff. So there are some people who know who he is, but largely, you know, he's trying very hard to keep that secret and not make it into a big thing. And this is a little bit of a spoilery thing, but there comes to be a point, a juncture through the course of it where a couple of them actually, where the temptation is to let everybody know what he's doing in order to get all of that attention and fame, and which so many young people want, you know, like even like internet fame and stuff like that. They want to have, you know, that attention. And there are temptations for that along the way, but he eschews those temptations. Like he manages to not give in to them because he realizes that it's more important that he remain Spider-Man and not blow his secret identity.
Another theme that runs through a lot of these, especially the Batman stuff, but I think also in the past Spider-Man movies is vigilantism. And there's kind of a tension there with the lone wolf, to mix the metaphors, who goes out and rights wrongs, as opposed to a trust in rightful authority to take care of business.
Yeah, now that is a pitfall in the midst of all of this. Like, when you think of who should actually have the authority or who has the authority to take care of things in a community, you know, this is definitely a bit of a pitfall in a lot of these superhero movies. So, I mean, within the context of the Marvel Cinematic Universe, if you really want to geek out and think about it, you know, there are like agencies like SHIELD, which is sort of a kind of a at arm's length government bureau, or kind of like the FBI and the CIA, kind of a thing, like where they're involved in clandestine, you know, operations for the good of other people. And these are kind of like agents. These superheroes are people who are involved, connected to that. So in the way that he's kind of being mentored by Tony Stark, and Tony Stark is an Avenger, and the Avengers are part of an initiative by SHIELD that's involved, connected to the government, I guess in a way he's kind of deputized into it. But yeah, this is, I mean, that's really geeking out. But I mean, this is what you get with this Marvel Cinematic Universe, is that they're painting a very big story. So, you know, how does he fit into it all is part of this movie, and how the movie kind of comes together.
A couple of final questions here. If you had to put it in a nutshell, what would you say the worldview represented in this film is?
That's an interesting question. I would say that it's not necessarily Christian per se. I would hazard to guess that, you know, if you were to pin down the guys at Marvel and say, is this a Christian movie? They would say, no, right? It certainly has, he has a very virtuous character in a very positive way. And it does have some elements where they make some analogies back, or they riff on, or they, you know, connect in little things that are, you know, have historic Christian kind of tie-ins, like we were talking about with the trope of the Christ pose that he takes. And really, I mean, he is somebody who has a great care for his neighbors, and he's the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man. He wants to help others. So he's kind of like second table of the law. So, you know, in a way, I suppose, like, without a clear indication of faith in the midst of the whole story, it is kind of could go on the side of works righteousness, but at the same time, he doesn't really want all of the accolades. He's more happy to be anonymous and helpful first. So I guess on some level, you know, there is this movement out in the world today where people think that they can just be, you know, socially virtuous and hardworking in their communities without God. Is that the worldview that we're seeing here? I guess it depends on the point of view of the viewer, and what you're going to bring with you into the film. But there is no really super clear Christian element in terms of references to God, apart from that kind of trope of which you find in other movies, of the kind of Christ pose.
What, if any, pastoral concerns would you have with people, especially young viewers of Spider-Man Homecoming?
Like, this is a movie with teenagers in it. And I mean, like, the central character is a teenager. Michael Keaton as the Vulture is really great. He's kind of menacing. I don't even think he raises his voice at any point. And he's a really good villain. But I wouldn't say that the villain is like super like scary for small children. I think when I think about the movie, I think of the audience that's going to see it. There's probably going to be a lot of small children that see the movie. And because it's a movie about teenagers interacting with the adult world, it's going to have some content in it that actually won't be appropriate for small children. So there are a couple of kind of jokes that kind of pass quickly, but are, you know, sexual in nature, that, you know, really isn't for small kids. Like, people have to remember that, yes, this is Spider-Man, but the movie is not rated G. It's PG in Canada and PG-13 in the United States. So there's a spot where one kid is trying to help out Peter Parker, and he's doing some stuff on a computer when he's not supposed to be there, and somebody catches him, and they say, "What are you doing?" And he's trying to think of an answer, and he says, "I'm looking at porn." Well, you know, the normalization of watching porn for teenage kids, or for anybody for that matter, adults as well, is not healthy for the society. So the fact that it just kind of gets slipped in there without any comment is kind of disappointing. Also, there's some teasing that Peter Parker receives about his name, which is intended to be funny, but is not that great. And then there's another spot where you've got kids playing this kind of game with each other, or you catch the end of it where they're kind of talking about who they would have sex with, who they would marry, and who they would kill. Some of that stuff's a little jarring and kind of pops out of nowhere. I think parents need to be aware that that's in there and, you know, make their decisions appropriately. Like, you know, if you're going to get upset at Disney having a gay character like woven into Beauty and the Beast, you know, here you've got something where it's like, it's not LGBTQ stuff, but it is like morally suspect. So you have this kind of contrast. You have the character of Spider-Man, who is very virtuous and squeaky clean in a way, but not insufferably like a do-gooder type. But then other people around him are not as squeaky clean as he is. So I guess in a way that contrasts and helps make him shine a bit more. But, you know, could it be done in a different way? And probably the answer to that is yes, right? So those are going to be some moments that people might, like, certainly, you know, raise an eyebrow at, you know. And as parents, it might be nice to know before you even get into the theater. And, you know, in the reviews that I put online, there's always a link to the parental guide at imdb.org. And often they have a very good detailed list of what kinds of things you're going to find, if there's gory violence, if there's disturbing scenes, and if there's sexual content. They list all that stuff out. So the discerning parent who's, you know, thinking about it for their kids, they'll want to go and take a look at that first, or see the film first and think about whether the kid should go and see it, you know, that kind of a thing. So, you know, parental responsibilities, you know, are, you know, even with movies that are widely popular and are sort of seem like they're skewed for kids, you know, this is something that they need to kind of consider. Now, all of that said, this is not Deadpool, right? Like, there's a couple comments that come up and they are inappropriate, but it doesn't permeate the whole film and it doesn't weigh the whole film down. But they are there, and I think people should know about that.
You can read Pastor Ted Giese's review of Spider-Man Homecoming at issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Pastor Ted Giese has a bachelor's degree in fine arts. He's pastor of Mount Olive Lutheran Church in Regina, Saskatchewan, Canada, and taught a course for Concordia Lutheran Seminary titled Christianity in the Movies, A Lutheran Approach to Media Consumption. Ted, thanks.
Thank you.
Terry Mattingly is with us on the other side of the break to talk about worship wars, patriotism, a Baptist megachurch in Dallas, and that Make America Great Again anthem. Stay tuned. Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. Pilgrim Lutheran, Santa Monica, California. Emmanuel Lutheran, Terre Haute, Indiana. Trinity Lutheran, San Angelo, Texas. Trinity Lutheran and Emmanuel Lutheran, Holloway, Minnesota. St. John Lutheran, Schaumburg, Illinois. Our Savior Lutheran, Pipestone, Minnesota. Real Lutheran Fellowship, Rochester, Minnesota. Living Word Lutheran Church, The Woodlands, Texas. St. James Lutheran, Logansport, Indiana. St. John's Lutheran, State Center, Iowa, and Trinity Lutheran, West Chicago, Illinois. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, click support, and print a one-page flyer. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll publicize your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support, the Issues Etc. 300.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Our cities are some of the greatest mission fields on the planet, but the footprint of the church is shrinking. We dare not shrink from our cities. Christ is needed now in our urban areas. From chaos, turmoil, decay, death, and destruction, Jesus brings peace, hope, resurrection, eternal life, and rebuilding. And you can help by being a hero for the city. Find out how at lcms.org/citymission or on Facebook at LCMS City Mission. Every city needs a hero. Capes and helmets not required.
People are talking about the Lutheran Federal Credit Union. Lutheran FCU was created solely to serve LCMS workers, families, and entities, and proceeds benefit LCMS organizations. Lutheran FCU offers deposit accounts and loans and has service access at thousands of branches and ATMs nationwide. Lutheran FCU also offers members Christian-based lending advice for new loans and refinancing, minimal account fees, and superior personalized service. Check them out at LutheranFCU.org.